Thanks for tuning in to the Lean 911 podcast, where you'll have a voice directly from the Gemba. I will rely on my three decades of Lean successes, as well as my failures, to answer your most challenging questions regarding your Lean transformation. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio, President and CEO of Lean Horizons Consulting, and the principal architect of the Danaher Business System. Looking forward to your questions. Now, let's go to the Gemba.
Hi, I'm Mark DeLuzio for Lean 911. This is episode 65, Lessons from the Danaher Business System. This is the first of several series I'm going to do on the Danaher Business System. And this first one, I'm going to talk about purpose. And so many lean transformations are started, but they're not centered around a fundamental purpose that the organization in total can share and understand. So I want to talk about the importance of a purpose, why we need one, and what that means not only for you and your shareholders, but also your customers, and as you'll see, most importantly, your employees. Okay. So again, many companies, I think it's fashionable because everybody has them in their annual reports. I mean, if you look at any annual report today, everybody has some sense of a continuous improvement business system. It really doesn't matter, you know, whether it's Six Sigma or Lean. Somehow the CEO feels compelled to lay out the fact that they've got this great continuous improvement process. And I think, as you know, not all of them are all that great. And just because you put a bunch of stuff on a slide and present it at shareholder presentations and put some fancy name to it does not mean that it's going to have any kind of value unless certain things are done. And I'm going to talk about those components over the next several series on what a good business system needs to look like. Okay. And yes, this is going to be centered around lean. Not the theory of constraints, not Six Sigma, not demand flow technology, not agile, not industry 4.0, 5.0. I don't even know what those are because I think I missed industry 1, 2, and 3. That sort of passed me by over the last three or four decades. But anyway, I want to talk about what makes a good lean business system. And I'm going to start with purpose, okay? Now, the slide I'm showing you here, if you are looking on YouTube or Rumble, has the five P's. Now, we have a boot camp at Lean Horizons that takes executives through this boot camp. It's a two-day boot camp. And if those of you in foreign lands that are listening to this and don't know what a boot camp is the first training that anybody in our military goes through. It's a grueling 8-12 weeks of training. You go through push-ups and calisthenics. You get very little sleep. You lose a lot of weight. You get really strong, and they test you as much as they can, not only physically but mentally, okay? Now, we don't make executives do push-ups. However, one of my clients did challenge me to do push-ups, and I came out on top. I did 51. He could only do 50. And I could have done more, but in the spirit of lean, if he did 50, why should I do more than 51? So I didn't want to overproduce anyway. But we don't make you do calisthenics or push-ups or anything like that. But the boot camp is the opportunity for executives to get together and talk about these five P's. Okay, and I'll show you another chart in a minute, but we talk about purpose. That's the first one we talk about in principles, people, plan, and process. Now, one thing I will say is that when you look at these five P's, most lean transformations, most of them that I've seen, start with process and end with process. And in process is where we talk about all the tools. 5S and standard work and Kanban and, you know, cell design and all the things that, you know, you probably know and love. But it seems like a lot of lean transformations stick there and stay there. Now, what happens is we end up auditing ourselves against these tools. And I've done an episode or two on lean audits and how I'm against them. And if you, and I won't spend time on that today, but go back and listen to some of those recordings, those episodes, and see how lean audits can really be detrimental to your lean transformation. Okay. Anyway, these are the five P's. I want to focus today strictly on purpose. I'll be taking you through all these other ones later, but purpose to me is where we start. And that's what I'd like to take you through. So this is the framework. And again, if you're looking at this on YouTube or Rumble, the framework is for the Lean Bootcamp. Starts with purpose, goes to principles, people, plan, and process. Okay. Now, we talk about all the different things in each one of these categories. In order for you to have a successful lean transformation, you have to cover these five P's, all right? So I'm showing a fishbone right now that has some of the components under each one of these five P's, okay? Now, let's start with purpose, and that's what this episode will be dedicated to. And here's the question I think you need to answer as executives. Your executive team needs to get together and ask the question, why do you want to embark on a lean transformation? And then why should anybody care? Why should anybody care for whatever reasons you come up with? Why should they care? Why should your employees care? Why should your customers care? Do you think your customers really care how many Kaizens you do? I don't think so. I think they care more about on-time delivery, great quality, great service, a great value for the product you're selling to them, okay? They don't care how many Kaizens you do. They don't care about your lean transformation. They care more about all those things and that you're a sustainable, reliable supplier, okay? But you need to ask the question, why do you want to do this? And why would anybody care about your answers? Okay. Now, I want to take you to something I've developed called the Lean Trilogy. Now, I talk about this in my book, Flatlined, and I've talked about it many times on LinkedIn. I've talked about it many times I have a white paper on this. I'd be happy to send that to you at the end, you know. My email, just send me an email to mark@lean911.com. I'd also like to, I talk a lot about this Lean Trilogy. Now, what you've got here is employees, shareholders, and customers as the trilogy. And the bottom line with these three stakeholder groups is that they all have to win. Your employees have to win. Your customers have to win. And your shareholders have to win. It cannot be a zero-sum game. Now, that doesn't mean that any one decision along your transformation, you're going to compromise one group over another. Okay, that might happen. But when you step back and in the long term, take a look at this, is everybody winning? And that's not for you to decide, by the way. The only people who could decide they're winning are the people who exist in those stakeholder groups. Your employees are the ones that will define what winning looks like. So will your customers. And many times your customers vote with their feet and with their wallet. And sometimes you don't even know they're gone if you're not paying attention. So we'll talk about all three of these groups. Okay, it cannot be a zero-sum game. Everybody must win. Okay. Let's talk about employees. First thing I'll say, and it's not on this slide that I'm showing, but first thing I'll say is if you're going to embark on a lean transformation and you're not willing to guarantee no layoffs because of lean improvements, then you might as well just hang it up right now. Okay. So many CEOs don't have the courage to do that. They have faith that they're going to, you know, create value with lean. And it's funny too, because so much focus is on productivity, which to me is a function of good processes, not how hard people work, whether or not they're doing their jobs or not. You know, it's an old traditional thought process way back to the 1950s. When you're thinking that way, your employees want to come in and do a good job. They don't want trouble. They don't want frustration. They don't want things to go wrong. I mean, why would they, right? So we have to provide the framework of Kaizen in order for employees to win. Just to say we have a lean transformation and you go out and do a couple of Kaizens, but you don't provide anybody the time or the framework, the training, the support, the resources that are needed, it's not going to happen. Then all of a sudden you see companies laying off their lean staff. How many times have you seen that? I see it all the time. That's a failure of leadership. That's not a failure of the lean staff. Okay. One company that had massive layoffs in their lean, it's a defense contractor. They had massive layoffs in their lean staff. Okay. And this is after recruiting people from all around the country, having their families move and everything else. It's not working. It's not going. Well, some of these divisions within this particular company said, yeah, we're going to do Kaizen. We're going to allow that on Wednesday afternoon after lunch from 1 to 3, 2 hours. And they expect all kinds of global wonderfulness to happen with their lean transformation. Not going to happen. Okay. It's not going to happen. So you got to provide that framework, first of all. Okay. The more engaged your people are in the Kaizen process on the work that they perform, the better morale and satisfaction and all that good stuff, right? Now, why else do we want to do this? We want to provide employees career development opportunities, learn some new skills to become more valuable to the organization, all right? So there's a lot of reasons why we want to do this. I have a chart up here that says that, you know, when you start out, a lot of people learning new things are going to be hopefully motivated, but they're going to be ineffective. And there's a lot of change management going on there with people just not certain how well they're going to perform. But if you're standing there with a clipboard expecting results out of every single day of Kaizen, you're going to fail. That's not the way this has to go, okay? So what we want is once they become more attuned with how to do this, they'll become more motivated and effective. And as they go up the curve of learning, they will go back into the ineffective bucket and then eventually work their way out into the effective bucket. Okay, so please understand that you've got to give people space to learn. You've got to give them space to make mistakes. And on a previous episode, I talked about the fact that we have to have a blameless environment and we need to indict the process when something goes wrong, not indict the people. Okay. So all of these things I'm talking about need to be communicated. And you can't just communicate once. I was working with a company and I asked some questions about things like this. Oh, yeah, we had a meeting with them back in November, and we talked to them about all these things. Well, geez, right now it's July. That's like over half a year ago. And that's it? That's your communication? Okay. Communication is a process, and it has to be continuous. You cannot over-communicate when you have a lean transformation. Now, this whole business about no layoffs, I've gotten a lot of flack when I posted this kind of stuff on LinkedIn. They say, well, what about if, and what if happens here, and how can you do this, and I don't agree, and blah, blah, blah. You're not going to get anybody to engage and give you their ideas if they're walked out the door after you say, okay, I went into an area that had 10 people. We did Kaizen. We only need 6. And those 4 walk out the door. how successful will you be getting engagement later? Matter of fact, you'll have people working against you. You'll have people sabotaging or just maybe not raising their hand when they hear their equipment sound funny, okay? And they'll manufacture their own overtime and you'll never know how it happened, okay? But you won't make improvements if you disrespect your people by sending them out the door after you ask them to give you their ideas as to how to improve their processes that they work on, okay? I don't think you need a PhD in psychology to understand this, but it's amazing how many companies will not do this. Now, does this mean that if there are huge economic calamities, okay, with the industry or with our economy, that we don't adjust the workforce? Well, I'm going to leave that up to you as management, but I'm talking about lean improvements now, okay? And I don't want that to be a deflection from this point I'm trying to make, okay? So you notice I started with employees, okay? The other question I'll have for you with employees is, how do you know what they want? How do you know what their objectives are? Have you asked them? Everybody assumes they know. Oh, I know what employees want. Really? How do you know? And then once you find out, you need to somehow monitor that and measure it like any other KPI. How are we doing on this? It could be survey scores. It could be morale. It could be all kinds of different things. But be careful not to count activities, okay? I'm not saying you shouldn't count activities. A lot of people say, well, geez, I'm going to count the number of improvements in our new suggestion system, and that will gauge involvement. It might. There might be a correlation there. There might not be, okay? So be careful with this. Make sure you truly understand what it is that your employees truly are looking for and that their goals are going to be met, okay? Okay, let's talk about customers. I want to say the same thing about customers. I mean, how do you know what your customers want? Yeah, I think it's easy to say they want the lowest price. I think it's probably easy to say they want on-time delivery, short lead times, responsiveness, good service. Yeah, they want all that stuff. Is that all? I don't know. Because when you start looking at true voice of the customer, have we really asked our customers what it is they need and what they want? Okay. Do they feel we're getting the value? You know what's funny about customers and engineers in particular, or I should say more technical people in manufacturing? They look at customers and their view of a quality to a customer all has to do with the product. The product met spec. It worked the way it was supposed to work. Okay. I was working with one company that said if they did not consider this a quality problem when they would ship a pallet of product to a customer, they had the wrong label on it, wrong part number. Or if they shipped a pallet of product to a customer on second shift when they weren't working second shift. Okay. Or shift it too early. Okay. They don't look at that as quality problems. The customer doesn't slice your performance by delivery and by quality. They just look at that supplier and say it's a bad quality supplier for whatever reason. And you've done the same thing. I'm sure in your daily life, you've gone to a restaurant. And or you went to a retail store and weren't treated nicely. You don't slice and dice, right? You just say it's a bad quality store, it's a bad quality restaurant. I'm not going back there, right? So put yourself in the seat of the customer. How would you feel if you were treated that way? Yeah. The wrong label on a pallet is in fact a defect. Okay. So I would ask you to go and define what is a defect in your company. And hopefully you'll be talking more than just products. Okay. We need to be thinking as business people, not as technical engineers only. Okay. So asking the customer what they wanted, right? Do we really know? And are there requirements that they have that we are not aware of? And I'm going to tell you a quick story that happened to me. In my early career, I was running manufacturing for Jake Brake, and Hino Motors, which is part of Toyota, was one of our customers. Okay. So I was shipping to Hino City, Japan, from Bloomfield, Connecticut. It's where Jake Brake was, and it's where the Danaher Business System got its start under Art Byrne and George Konosaker. We were shipping 100% on-time delivery and quality to Hino, to their request date, all the way to Japan from little old Bloomfield, Connecticut. No warranty, no quality problems on the line, everything perfect. So when I made my first trip over there, I'm thinking, wow, they're going to roll out the red carpet for me, and they're going to throw sake parties for me, right? Okay, and pat me on the back and all that. Well, I got there. I walked into the procurement office for the diesel engine because the Jake Brake went on. Matter of fact, it was the most expensive component that went on the diesel engine, and I walked in the office, and on the wall they force ranked their best supplier to their worst performing supplier right on the wall, and there were 110 suppliers. Okay. So dummy me, I'm looking up and I'm looking, I gotta be number one or two or maybe three at best. I mean, everything's perfect, right? And my name wasn't up there. But then I thought to myself, well, look, every one of these names is written in kanji characters, so I gotta be one of those guys, right? As my eyes gazed down the chart, I saw in English, Jacobs Manufacturing, number 106 out of 110. 106, okay. Got in the meeting, and they said, DeLuzio-san, we ranked you 106 out of 110 of all of our diesel engine suppliers, and let us tell you why. The labels on your box aren't always exactly in the same spot. Now, our labels are always in the upper right-hand corner, consistently. But sometimes they were put on by hand, and sometimes they were a quarter inch off, half an inch off, whatever. They weren't always exactly in the same spot. Now, remember, they weren't barcoding back then, or, they weren't doing any of that. They were just standard labels that had all the, product description and part numbers and all that stuff on it, right? So I argued like an idiot, and I said, well, wait a minute. That doesn't affect form, fit, or function. And, they said, DeLuzio-san, if you cannot guarantee the quality outside the box, how can you guarantee the quality inside the box? Now, this is after 100% quality, 100%. We did the first 3P line, I think, in the United States with Nakao and Hino engineers. You couldn't make a mistake in that line. If I told you to go in and make a defect, you'd have a hard time doing it. We had pokey oaks, we had judokas, all kinds of things, right? So anyway, I looked at this and I finally contemplated after the meeting, and I said, you know what? They're challenging my mindset. I was sloppy. I don't have a standard for putting that label on the box. Now, most of the other domestic OEMs like Cummins and Caterpillar and people like that wouldn't care. Not Hino. On-time delivery and 100% quality are just entrees of doing business with them. You don't get patted on the back for great quality and great delivery. That's just a ticket of entry to do business with them. But when they looked at that label, they said, nope, it's not the same. And we're worried about that. We're worried about your mindset because you're not thinking standardization all the way through. Okay. Now, why am I telling you this story? Because it's a clear case. I did not ask. I assumed what the customer wanted. Just like with your employees, do not assume you know what those employees want. And do not assume you think you know what your customers want. Sit down and ask them, and then put systems in place to make sure that happens. Okay. So that's my little Hino Motors story. I guess I at the end of all this beating I took, I guess I was happy to beat four people out. I was 106 out of 110, but I guess that wasn't any consolation, quite frankly, but it was a lesson learned, right? Okay. Let's talk about shareholders. Everybody thinks shareholders want great shareholder returns. Of course they do. Who doesn't, right? Why would they invest in your company if they wanted to get great returns, whether they come in form of dividends or stock appreciation or anything else? But don't assume, again, that your shareholders only want that. Your shareholders want an ethical company. They want somebody who's going to be great stewards of the environment. They may want people who are fair and non-discriminatory. There could be all kinds of things that shareholders are requesting and all kinds of reasons why they're investing in your stock other than shareholder return, okay? A big company, I won't mention the name, actually rejected the CEO's compensation package because he took bonuses after laying off tens of thousands of people, okay? Millions of dollars worth of bonuses after laying off tens of thousands. Well, those shareholders didn't quite only care about shareholder return. They said, wait a minute, this isn't right. It's not ethical. I'm going to vote down your comp package because we don't think that's morally correct in terms of what you're doing. Okay? Don't think shareholders only want great shareholder return. Now, you're going to look at all the different things that you do to run a business, and you might say to yourself, well, look, every time I give raises out to my employees, that's going to take down our profits, and that's going to compromise my shareholder. Well, if you think linearly about that, yeah, you might be right. But however, have you thought about the fact that if it's a great place to work and you're paying people fairly, that the output and the overall value that's provided to the customer is going to be enhanced? So you can't look at these transactions as in a lane, in a bucket, right? You have to look at it overall and say to yourself, no, these are just doing the right thing. And I think if you think about doing the right thing, then I don't think you have to justify it then. Just do the right thing, okay? Don't underpay people when they shouldn't be underpaid. You'll see it in your attrition anyway, and that will cause you all kinds of headaches in terms of quality and delivery and disruption and growth, okay? Remember what Deming said on the cost of poor quality. The biggest cost, and there's like 95 components of cost of poor quality, but the biggest component is when your customers leave because they don't want to do business with you anymore. And sometimes when those customers leave, you don't even know they left. How many times have you left an establishment, whether it's a restaurant, a retail store? I'm just not going back there again. They probably don't know you're not going back there. But you left and you gave your business to somebody else, right? So those are the kind of things you got to think about on this when you talk about shareholders, and just understand that they too want things that, you know, aren't always obvious. Okay. Let me talk about Honda. When I visited Honda, and we all talk about Toyota, right? But let's talk about Honda because they're also a pretty amazing company. When I walked into Marysville way back in the 90s and visited their Accord plant, they're making the Honda Accord. They had a sign on the wall. Honda prioritizes employees first, customers second, shareholders third. That was actually on their wall. If they do not take care, and this is how they explained it to us, if they do not take care of their employees, the employees are not going to take care of our customers. And if we don't take care of our customers, we are not going to take care of our shareholders. You want to talk about five whys or root cause analysis? Okay. It seems to me they had this pretty much much understood. That's Honda. Okay. Honda actually has that as a mantra. And I can't see how you would not agree with this. I mean, I see CEOs make presentations all the time, and they talk about the customer. Customer's number one, right? I don't agree with that. I really don't. And maybe we shouldn't be thinking about who's number one or number two. But when you say customer's number one and our shareholders, need this amount of return, but you don't mention the employees at all, or you pay very little attention to the people who are going to deliver for you, then that's a miss. And don't you think for one minute that your employees aren't watching and that your employees are not listening to what you're saying, or more importantly, what you're not saying. Okay. So I like the Honda. That's why I want to bring this out. I like the Honda approach. We take care of our employees first. Otherwise, we won't take care of our customers. And if we don't take care of our customers, we will not take care of our shareholders. Okay. Again, guys, this is not rocket science. This is not rocket science. Now, I know many of you are probably sitting there saying, hey, wait a minute, Mark, there are more stakeholders than just, employees, customers, and shareholders. And yeah, I agree. You have other stakeholders. You have society. You have the economy. You have the environment. You have your community. There are several other stakeholders as well, right? But I want to focus on the Lean Trilogy, because if we don't get those three right, you're not going to get any of these other ones right either, okay? So I'm not saying you should ignore these. Providing economic growth in your community, a place that would make your community a vibrant place to live, okay? Boosting local economies, not moving your plants to Mexico or to China, but making it work here, okay? And there's no reason why you can't make it work here, all right? Jake Brake was a UAW high cost manufacturing company up in Northeast, Connecticut, New England. And it was one of the more profitable companies in Danaher when I was there, okay? You don't have to relocate. If you're relocating, it's probably a failed process that you're putting in relative to your lean transformation, okay? So, again, we talk about the environment. We talk about, the whole, economy and what we're bringing to the party relative to these other stakeholders, okay? So there you go. That's kind of a summary of purpose, okay? Now, let's just summarize. Remember, you need to communicate. Why should employees care about your purpose? Of course you want to make more money. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money. Matter of fact, it's a good thing. It's a good thing for everybody when that happens. Okay, it's a good thing for everybody. But if you don't have a no layoff policy, it's not going to work. All right. And there are strategies, which maybe I'll do in another podcast, that talks about what you do with excess employees. Okay, there's a strategy for that. But laying them off is not the answer. And you'll shoot yourself in the foot, and it'll be the end of your lean transformation, okay? And then you'd be wondering, well, lean doesn't work, how come? It's kind of like me saying my golf clubs don't work when I hit the ball into the woods. It's you, not the golf clubs, not your lean transformation. Lean works perfectly well. It's got to be operated correctly with the right principles and the right purpose, okay? So you really need to sit down as an executive team, understand that purpose, and you also need to be able to communicate it. Okay. I mean, your lean transformation should tie back to implementing your strategic business imperatives, which means you're going to grow the business and you're going to provide security for your people. Gainful employment, a place to really flourish. I mean, the tenure now with companies is so short. the days are over when people spend 20, 30 years with the same company. I don't know what the average, you know, tenure is. I got to say it's 3 to 4 years and people are off onto another company for whatever reason. Okay. Provide that environment where they can learn, grow, prosper, get promoted. Okay. And this goes back to, do you have a career development process, talent management process? All these things may be subject for another day, but make your company a great place to work. And I know I just stole that phrase from the company that probably has copyrighted that phrase, but make it a great place to work. Don't give people an opportunity to make the wrong decision and leave you, okay? That's your job. And if you can get that going, and you know, I didn't show a slide on this, but there's a study done that the more people participate in Kaizens, the better their attitudes towards everything, customers, teamwork, themselves, leadership, okay? It all gets better when they're involved in improving the work. But remember, you got to provide them the framework in which to do so. So don't go out with a big announcement that you're going to be doing lean without first having understood the purpose. And then in subsequent episodes, I will talk about all the other things you're going to need to do to make sure that all the pieces are put together in terms of the 5 P's to make sure your business system is going to work. Failure to do any one of those P's is a failure mode that I see all the time. And have not yet seen a company truly succeed where they left off one of the P's. Okay. All right. That's episode 65. Lessons from the Danaher Business System Office. The first of many installments on that. Do you have a purpose? Not an easy question to answer, but you're going to need to answer it, discuss it with your team. And like I said, then you're going to need to communicate it and make sure people give a damn about what it is you're telling them. Okay. What's in it for me? That's the question you have to answer. Okay. See you next time. Thanks. Stay lean.
Thanks for listening to the Lean 911 podcast. I'll be happy to address your questions or feedback on future episodes. Email me at mark@lean911.com. You can check out our other episodes by visiting our website at lean911.com, our YouTube channel, wherever you listen to podcasts. This is your host, Mark DeLuzio. Thanks for listening.